This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction. And free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements. Featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Oh, there's a chance for Curtis.
Welcome to another episode of the number one AFC Wimbledon podcast, The Wombles Had a Dream. My name is Lee Finch, and as ever, I will be joined by the one and only Danny Baker. Tonight, we're going to be discussing the Salford game. We're then going to discuss the sad passing of a Wimbledon legend in Joe Kinnear. We're going to discuss some of our great memories of Joe and some of the games, and etc. We'll move on, and we're going to discuss Alex Bass. Is he the best goalkeeper that we've seen? I know people are going to shout Ramsdale at the radio or wherever they listen. But yeah, we're going to discuss Alex Bass, the clean sheets that we've kept. Is it solely down to him or is it a defence as well? And then we'll move on and discuss the MD meeting the other day and a few other things. And then we'll finish with a preview of the game sold out way end, hopefully, against Wimbledon. So I'll introduce the one and only Danny Baker.
Hello. That was normally you do. Are you good? You went the only Danny Baker and you left the void, you know.
See if you were up for it, mate. See if you were
dead,
ready.
Dead radio is a crime, but I'm all right, mate. I think I've got a virus. Went to see the doctor today. A bit of a virus. Got this horrible coffee, which doesn't go away. It didn't help, however, that my little girl decided we had to go on a day trip yesterday. So it went to Hampton Court, went on the boat, went on the bus. And do you know what? It's really annoying, actually. You might empathize with this. I'm at nursery. I'm picking Dolly up on, what was it, Monday. They give me a bear to look after. They're like, right, here's a bear. Right, okay. I've picked the bear up. They're like, right, here's the bear. And here's a book. And you've got to basically write about the journey. That
and do photos been. And stuff.
Right? Yeah. So I'm sitting there thinking, okay, can't be too bad. The person before at us took the bear to Amman. Like, what?
To where?
Amman. The country, Oman.
Oman. You're saying Oman.
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 However you want to pronounce it.
Yeah, but you're going Oman, which is totally different. Oman.
The Oman, I call it.
Well, you're taking it to Hampden Court. Hampden Court.
And I'm taking the little thing
and
to
on the 34
Court.
Bus.
Well, no, it wasn't. It was I got the 111 from Kingston, actually. I got, well, I'll tell you what, it was a good day out there, actually. Parked in Hampden Court. And then I got on the little boat thing down the Thames, quite nice. Got off at Kingston, had a little wander around, mooched about, bit of lunch, on the bus, back to Hampton Court, Easter egg hunt, and the Magic Garden. It was absolutely superb day out.
So I live right on the estuary. So I live at the end of the Thames pretty much. The Thames don't really impress me because I see it every day.
No, that don't in words of Shania Twain, that don't impress you much.
But yeah, we had one of them once. My boy bought one home and he said you have to take photos of it and him and then it's quite annoying, actually, because it's like...
You take him to Millwall away, did you?
Can't remember what we
That'll
did.
That'll be fun. Can you imagine that? Having like a little bear and taking it. Like, where did you
with
go?
With Stone Island badge on it.
Middlesbrough away.
Get the badge in.
Covered in blood and that.
Well, we don't fight. We're lovers.
No, but the Bears do. The Bears, you know, particularly them.
Grizzly or polar?
You know, oh, either or. Up to you. What
is you could? Do you reckon if a bear was coming, you could fight it off?
No, I could probably talk it out of it. Be like, look, come on.
I reckon I could do it.
I've been watching recently. Well, not recently. This morning. Been watching the new Man
been
City
watching
documentary.
This morning? Oh, sorry.
No, I've not been watching that. Been watching the
sorry, mate. The figures,
Man City triple.
I heard on the radio the viewing figures of this morning since Holly Willoughby has left has gone down. So that's because all the young men now are not watching it anymore.
Well, they're all at work now, aren't they? Bless them.
Yeah, grafting. So sorry, the Man City documentary.
The Man City documentary, and they had a massive debate in the changing room about who would win in a fight between a crocodile and a hippopotamus.
Hippopotamus. And,
well, obviously. Easy. But you've got all of the whole squad, like Grealish is going mental about it. The only one who was like, no, it's a crocodile, is Rodrigo. So there you go, Rodri. He was like, no, crocodile all day long. He is an idiot.
I don't think I couldn't fight a crocodile.
I don't think you could fight anybody, mate.
I reckon I could do a bear.
Hold on, how big is this bear?
Punch it on the nose.
Yeah, but the bear will come back.
I know,
and
actually.
Like, pour it off, won't he?
Sorry, that's a shark.
Yeah, shark you back.
If a shark's coming towards you, you punch on the nose, which I always found weird that if a shark, to do a shark in, you have to punch on the nose. But when you're in water, punches are slower, aren't they?
Well, it depends. Someone like me, I've got good hand speed, so I've been very blessed. Hands of steel.
I'd do a shark as long as it was under 12.
Well, of course, yeah, because that's good.
Do you know what I mean?
If the shark wanted a game of table tennis,
and I could do a hammerhead shark as well, because they can't really see, because their eyes are right on the side. So I'd have to.
So you'd get in the middle, would you?
I'd go sideways. Yeah.
Love that from you. That's why I've always admired you. Your sort of Ray Mears survival skills.
I used to live in the countryside.
Of course.
You
must get loads of hammerhead sharks.
I grew up in the countryside where the only thing that would wake me up in the morning was like a cockerel at the end of my garden.
You've also got to do with fighting a shark.
No, and then I moved to Tooting and it was
loads of sharks there, yeah?
No, it was a bit of a wake-up call moving from the countryside to moving to Tooting Broadway, literally above the vets. It was above the vets, actually. So, yeah, moving to Tooting Broadway, it was a bit of a wake-up call from this nice, peaceful countryside to literally rows happening outside my window between rival gangs of...
Yeah, but that's great, but what's that got to do with you fighting a shark, though?
No, I was talking about... Yeah, I don't know.
I just don't know where you're going with this.
Well, going anywhere, because, as I said, I could do a shark.
Interesting.
And I could outrun a bear.
No, you can't now. You couldn't outrun your nan at the minute.
I have put on a bit of timber. I'll blame Easter.
Yeah.
Listen,
we're all middle-aged podcasters.
It's like today. I was going to say to you, actually, because talking about eggs, I had a podcast today and they were talking about their favourite eggs and how they would rank them in order.
Oh, that's good. Like a World Cup of eggs.
Yeah, so I've got four. Obviously, you've got four.
Right.
So fried first.
Oh, you mean actual eggs?
Yeah, yeah. What do you mean?
Oh, okay. Disclaimer. Not an egg person at all.
So fried egg, Easter egg,
right? Yeah,
poached, scrambled.
Okay. I am Easter, Cadbury's cream egg, and then Fabergé egg and any other egg that's not an egg. Another egg I've got to eat.
You don't eat eggs.
No, the worst food is quiche, and I actually had that the other day. I said,
You already told us the story last time. We lost 100 listeners because of that story.
Yeah, and I bet they're all quiche lovers going out, you know, just love quiche t-shirts.
If once everyone's now tuned off, let's actually get down to the big.
Well, talking about
someone made a complaint, didn't they? And said our waffle that we at the start of the episode actually turns them off the podcast.
Brilliant. Well, talking of switching off and tuning out, that first half
was the worst game
against Salford was, I think, right up there with the worst football I've ever seen.
But we said
there were
loads.
That was actually the worst, and that wasn't blaming Wimbledon as such. The conditions were pathetic.
Yep.
But what was interesting, I felt on Saturday, a couple of things kind of showed their head with a lot of stuff. The big one is Barma is not a right back.
No.
And he's got to play central.
He can't with Johnson and Lewis.
Well, he can if you play three.
if we don't need to pay for it at the moment. 4-4-2 was probably the right call.
Well, it's the right call with the wrong personnel. But because Barmer,
yeah, and when, especially when you've got Ogundeer and Biller sitting there, and they're our players, I don't get it.
Well, I do get it because he wants the long throw in the team, but he's definitely not a right back.
No, and also he's not our player unless we've been told we have to play him. But yeah, I don't get when we got Biller and Ogundeer, two decent right backs, as I said before, right backs. I don't get why Ogundeer is not in that team at the moment if we're playing four at the back. He's done nothing wrong when he got dropped, kind of thing. He got dropped because we changed the formation to a three, but yeah. And he ain't a wing back, to be fair. But he's a right back.
Ogundeer's not a right.
No, but he's a right back.
He is, but let's be honest. And again, it said on Saturday, all we do is play for this poxy long throw. That's all we're playing. And we won it on Saturday because of it. And everyone goes, oh, it's, you know, bloody, bloody, blah. Well, we scored on Omar Buga, great header and bloody, bloody, blah. So it's difficult. He's got to play Barmer because our whole attacking game is based around
him. I've got a thing about football at the moment, right? And it really annoys me.
What's your thing about football today?
Right. So Salford had nothing to play for. Yeah, they can't get relegated. They can't go up. Yeah?
Correct.
So why have they come just... I know it's his tactics and who he is and stuff, Robinson. But they come just to spoil the game. Completely spoil it. They had, what, 7 bookings in the first half?
That was mental.
6 or 7 bookings. And they were all bookings. They were like... Yep. I think
there was no doubt on any of them.
Not for me. And I just thought, why have you come down just to spoil the game? We're a team that if you get after and you get at us, you probably could win that game and beat us. And I just don't get in football nowadays why are teams, when they've got nothing to play for, we were really poor, really appalling in that first half. But I just don't get it. Why are teams coming down now just to spoil a game when you've got why not go out there and try and play football, try and beat us off the park? If you lose 1 or 2-0, yeah, I just don't get it anymore with football. It's just mad game.
But maybe, mate, exactly the same as us. They're limited. They just don't have. And I thought they were okay. I didn't think they were brilliant, but I thought they were all right. I thought, poor team, I thought. I mean, the challenge is, like you said, is that if they don't feel that they've got the attacking prowess to do anything, then they're going to play that way. And I'm different to you. I understand why they want to just turn up, not want to go for the motions, because none of them want to get injured.
Boring to watch, Dan. That game on Saturday was, again, one of the worst games I thought. And this is every week now. We're turning around.
Genuinely, the first half was absolutely...
But Dan, we're saying that on a regular basis now. We're meant to be a playoff side, right? And we're still within the shouts of the playoffs. And I'm just getting the feeling that everyone's just done. The season's done for us. Even though we could still get in the playoffs, we win the next 3 games, Cooley drop more points, we could get in the playoffs. And I think people are just like, the football is really poor to watch, and it has been for weeks. We say it most weeks now, that was the worst first half, or that was the worst game of football. And yeah, it's awful to watch. And the other team we're watching as well ain't good. Like Stockport the other week, I didn't think they were great, and they're going to win the league. And I didn't think they were... Brilliant side. Do you know what I mean? They cut us open a couple of times, but Bastion have many saves to make. Saturday again, it doesn't have many saves to make. We didn't make their keeper make any saves. I text you at half time. 45 minutes into that game, we had no shots on target in the whole of the game at home. Yeah. Again, when we're meant to be attacking teams and going for the playoffs. I did think Kelly had a half decent game. I thought he showed what he can do if we play correctly to him. There was a through ball at one point when he got in pace, used his pace, run at him, cut back, bit of skill, and then just missed a shot, which I thought, yeah, that's brilliant. And it shows that if we use Kelly correctly, he could be an asset to us. Omar played well. But yeah, everything else, I just thought we were really poor. Curry going off didn't help because he was obviously getting down the left, and then his face was all over the place when he went off.
As you said, the game wasn't particularly good. Tilly looks
shot
well off the pace.
Looks done. Looks like he needs a break. Looks like he needs summer.
Just looks totally and utterly out of it. Nerfield he's the least aggressive winger or offensively I think I've ever seen in a Wimbledon shirt, and it might be a big statement there, but. There is nothing going forward from him at all.
He's one I struggle with a little bit now because I really like him, but I like him defensively. I like the fact that he works hard, gets the balls back for us. Do you know what I mean? But defensively. But as an attacking winger, I'm struggling with him because I think, what is he got? 1 assist and 1 goal this year?
He's not an attacking winger. He's actually, in my opinion now, more of a wing back. really.
Yeah, yeah. And it's I struggle with that a bit because, I said, when he came in, he scored in Benidorm and he scored a wicked goal there, and he looked like he was going to be this player who was going to get the ball down, run at his fullback, get behind, put the balls in. But he's now more aggressive in a defensive side and better in a defensive side than he is going forward. And that's a worry. As I said, Tilly, I don't know why Tilly's starting games or playing games at the moment. He looks shot to bits. Looks like he needs someone massively. We've got someone like Ryan McLean on the bench who really wants to get involved. Sasu, who's meant to be about it as well. I struggle.
But for all of the things we've spoken about and for all of the stuff that goes on, we needed to win. It was a cup final. In Jackson's defence and in Jackson's probably words, we came for the win. We got it. It doesn't matter how you get it. You just need to get it. And he got it. And it was terrible. It was scrappy. We're going to talk about him later, but it was probably Bassi's with the ball at his feet, was one of the worst performances I've ever seen from him in terms of kicking it and passing it. Him and Barmer there was a point where they were trying to pass to each other and they were just terrible, the pair of them. Yeah. But at the same time, he made a really good save down our end and he kind of kept us in it. And with the results that have happened, we're still in it. It's just one of those things that we've got. If we can just keep finding a way, Doncaster look like they are a train that is not going to get stopped.
Since they beat us 1-0, they haven't stopped.
They're just constantly winning.
They beat us 1-0. They were awful before they played us. Beat us 1-0. Weren't great on the day when they played us, to be fair. Now they're on a massive... There were two good things about Saturday. One, we won the game and we got 3 points.
Yep.
So you take that. Yeah, it's an awful game. You put the 3 points in the bag and go, right, thanks. It's another step closer to doing what we want, a 9th, 10th finish max.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Yep. So we'll take that all day long. And two, Cole Robinson's tears were brilliant to watch after the game and his interview.
Salty was he?
Oh, he's wicked. I love, what did he say? This has fueled him. The hatred that we have for him and he has for us is wicked. I love it. It's one of them ones now. Anytime we play Salford, it's going to be a little bit spicy all the time, I think, because of him. And that's what you need in football, I think. But I think he's actually good value. I like him. Not as in I like him as a person, but I love the fact that we have that kind of person that comes down and we can give him loads of stick and he proper loses his shit if they're losing. Do you get what I mean?
Funny though.
Oh,
and also the red cards, by the way, all of their kickoff, Reeves doesn't move. If you watch it from the angle, I don't know, was it Don's vlogs? Someone did a video behind the goal, and he doesn't move until the first ball's touched.
What?
And then Reeves goes.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know. I'm not being funny, but they all just stood there.
Oh, it was an awful free kick.
A person moved the ball and they all just stood there. There was plenty of time to hit it. And then as soon as he hit it, I just love the fact ref went, that's you. Another one. Yep, you can have that. And I think they were straight reds, weren't they?
No, the second one was straight. The first one was yellow. The other one was a straight red for foul and abusive language. Because he made a point of saying that some of the things our players said to the ref and when he was listening, did just went unchallenged kind of thing. And then his player said something, effing saying, or I can't remember what he said. But yeah, it was brilliant to watch after the game. That really cheered me up as well. Because I said, I didn't do a debrief on Sunday because I said to everyone, it was bad enough to watch once. I don't really want to have to go over it. There was nothing to go over. What we're going to talk about, the one shot that we had and scored a goal. So yeah, I didn't do a debrief because it was so poor. But it's 3 points in the bag. It's 3 points to finishing higher than, you know what I mean, where we want to be, pretty much where most Wimbledon fans want to be, 10th and above.
Yeah.
We can get there, we'd be happy at the end of the season. And as I said to you last couple of weeks, we got to judge this team and Johnny Jackson at the end of the season because it's such a close division that if we do finish 15th, 16th and stuff, we'd be going all, but we could still finish 10th, which I think everyone would be happy with. So that's why a couple more games. And the fact, yeah, Cole Robinson was crying and watered our pitch for us and we didn't have to waste any. So... wicked.
I'll be interested. They're quite an interesting club for me because I wonder whether the bubble will burst. The whole Gary Lineker, the whole Salford City.
Gary Lineker?
Gary Neville, sorry. Class of 92, all that kind of jazz.
Giggsy was there, wasn't he? So.
Apparently so.
He was in one of the... I can't see the bubble bursting because the guy they've got behind him, Peter Lim, the geezer owns Valencia. He's a billionaire, so... I can't see it, but they've got the ground now, which is hot. Have you been to Salford? I went this year when we drew 0-0 and Ali should have had a hat trick. Nice little. I like it. I thought it's for their stat, for them and their level, where their fan base is. It must be hard for them to get a fan base in that area.
And they haven't, they haven't got one of those, really.
No, and they never had. To be fair, they were a non-league team till the 92 come in, and the 92 have made it a bit bigger than it is. But they were a non-league team. They've got a non-league support, in my opinion, still. But
what do you think is their kind of ceiling then?
Where they are now, I think they've tried.
You think they'll just be a League Two team?
Yeah, because again,
that's the limit of their.
Where are players going to go now? Instead of going to Salford, they can go to Stockport. They can go to Wrexham.
Oh yeah, listen, I'm with you on
it. Do you know what I mean? There's enough teams around. Rochdale and Oldham are failing. Do you know what I mean? So that probably helps them a little bit. But
then, I mean, in that area, you're going to have Bolton. You've got Bolton, Bury. Bury on the way
Bury
up.
Are coming up again. Yeah, you've got. There's so much competition in that area. Accrington. Do you know what I mean? Yep. Always nick players. I heard on the radio today, Darren McAnthony was on TalkSport, and he said they've got link up. Peterborough got link up with Man City now. So Man City players have been sent to Peterborough and stuff, and yeah, he said. So, do you know what I mean? So I think Salford are kind of, I think they where they are, and you can see that where they're finishing, well below their standard. I think what their 92 want.
I mean, they were probably what, playoffs last year, close to it.
Yeah, they've been around the playoffs automatics.
Yeah,
but again, next year it could be totally different because you've got, I think, a weaker league next year if we get rid of Stockport, get rid of Mansfield, get rid of Wrexham. I think you've got a weaker league next year, and. I'm quite interested on next season how we do, but that'd be a conversation in a week or two because with coping, the money, and we'll talk about it later regarding the MD meeting, but what was said there. But yeah, I thought Saturday, it was awful. I don't think we should panic too much, throw toys up at the pram too much. It is awful. The football, unfortunately, I don't think it's just a Wimbledon issue. I think it's a bigger issue. I think there's teams obviously going for it now.
Yeah,
that are well in for the automatics in the playoffs and stuff, and there'll be some good games. Like the Champions League the other night was wicked.
Yeah.
I mean, that quality, that was amazing. And some of the, I watched, what is it, the other day, Ipswich Southampton.
Yeah,
good games. I think, as I said, most Wimbledon fans are done, I think. I think we were done after Milton Keynes. I think we turned around and went, right, we've got our special moment this year. If we can make the playoffs, brilliant. If we can't, I'm just, you know what I mean? And the football's been crap, but we are winning games still.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like I said, I've not been a big fan of the way we play football in terms. It's been a little bit dry. But I guess at this time of year, to be, if you said at the start of the season, we'd be three games away from potentially being in the playoffs. And knowing that if we won all three, we'd probably 80% chance, I reckon. I think Crawley might slip up a little bit as well. I think most fans would have bitten your arm off. So, yeah, I think it was a really positive result against a very, very functional team. And, onwards and upwards, I guess.
I'm hoping it'll come down to Walsall last game of the season and we have something to play for in that game.
That would be stellar. It'd be great
laugh,
to go.
It'd be good,
us versus Walsall. If we won, we might have a chance of going
but
up.
We've also got the chance that we've nicked the playoffs. We're going to have to play them. And then that ruins everything if we get beat by them over two legs that we've achieved this season, I think, in my opinion. And I don't want to say, well, I'm not one of these people who go, I don't want to get in the playoffs in case we have to play them. Because I think if we get in the playoffs, fuck them, we'll do them. But it is a point that if we do get in the playoffs, there's a big chance we could lose to them. And then we have all that. And then if they go up and they beat us in the meantime of doing it, it's quite annoying.
But let's not think about that.
No. All right, we'll move on. And when we come back, we'll pay a tribute to Wimbledon legend, ex-Wimbledon manager, Joe Kinnear.
The Wombles had a dream podcast by the fans, for the fans.
So we're back and we're going to be paying a tribute to Joe Kinnear, Wimbledon manager, absolute legend in my eyes, and the reason why I was a Wimbledon fan, so I first got taken to Wimbledon versus Liverpool in what would have been the League Cup. Back then, I think it was the Coca-Cola Cup. We drew two all after Hans Hagers punched into his own net. Then he saves a John Barnes penalty in the last minute. We win on penalties and everyone does the airplane celebration. And I just fell in love with Wimbledon, the people that I got to know, my mates, Gary, Anna, Vicky, Paul McMillan, people like that. And Joe Kinnear was a massive part of that because what I loved about Joe was that he was such a good manager. And I think people didn't pay enough respect or tribute enough to him when he was managing Wimbledon to what he got out of the players we had. And we also had players who everyone wrote off. Everyone said they weren't good enough. It didn't matter who we were playing, Arsenal away, Man U away. It didn't matter. They were shit and we were going to beat them. Didn't matter. You're coming up against Wimbledon. But yeah, he was manager of 19 January 1992 to 30 May 1999. He 364 games. And yeah, he was just, for me, an absolute legend. And yeah,
so firstly, obviously, it is sad. I know he's not been very well. He had obviously a number of different issues, bless him. And it is very, very sad that he's sadly passed. I was actually really gutted because, similar to you, he gave me some of the most fantastic memories.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think was so good about him then? Because he kind of just came in almost at the end of our, we're going to buy players from three or four divisions down and polish them up. We kind of still did a bit, but like Andy Clark, Warren Barton, those kind of players who were what, league, division three, division four, that kind of vibe. We didn't quite have that aspect. Well, then, mind you, did he buy Holdsworth? He must have done.
But the thing for me, I've listened to a lot of people because obviously Peter Wythe was before my time and he was apparently horrendous. And I think when Joe Kinnear came in after him.
We were dead and buried, by the way. I think it was someone said something stupid, like we were 16 points adrift.
I said, I don't know. I said, I only started supporting Wimbledon a little bit later in Joe's reign and stuff. And as I said, it was Joe that really got me supporting Wimbledon because we'd come up against the best. And all my mates were Arsenal, West Ham, Spurs. And I remember beating Spurs first game of the season 6-2. Yeah. And we absolutely destroyed them. And all my mates literally could not say a word to me. And I loved that, the fact that, do you know what I mean? We don't have that nowadays because obviously Spurs are in the Premier League, we're elite. But when we were Premier League, and no one could ever say anything to us because we'd beat them. Beat Chelsea 4-2 at Stamford Bridge. Neil Ardley scored a deflective goal from just outside the box. But for me, Joe Kinnear, what I loved about what he did as well is he'd get players from lower leagues, but he'd also bring non-league. He'd also bring youth team players in. Give players a chance, do you know what I mean? And if they were good enough, they'd, like Chris Perry's and people like that, come through and you speak to them. And his man management skills. And I think at that time, I weren't around that time, but if you hear and listen to people, he got what, because the crazy game was obviously before Joe Kinnear and it was before Vinny Jones and Fash, even though Vinny and Fash would like to make you think that they were the crazy game. It was because of them it was a crazy game. But it was before that under what's his name? Wally Downs and, do you know what I mean? Yeah. All them lads before that. And people got, their heroes were like Alan Batford and people like Bobby Gould and stuff like that.
Dave Bassett.
And they were the original crazy gang. I think he came in and realised that they needed to get back to that kind of, do you know what I mean? On a professional level, not non-league, that, but get back to the crazy gang days of, it does, like getting people like Vinnie Jones from a hod carrier in Willesden. Do you know what I mean? To be an actual professional footballer. And again, we got no respect from a lot of people, a lot of the press. Gary Lineker was very rude about us many, many occasions. But we actually had players who could play. Even Vinny could play a little bit. Do you know what I mean? Remember his goal at Arsenal with volley?
Yeah, brilliant.
Do you know what I mean? And absolutely, you also, brilliant. But you had people like Robbie L that they found, and he was unbelievable. He'd be a £50 million player now, probably more, I think, Robbie L. Alvin Leonardson for me. And we just had players like the Wand, Kimball, who weren't great players, but they just fitted the style that we played. He could find a striker, and we had some decent strikers on the six months. Do you know what I mean? And he could just find them on the left. We had Kenny Cunningham, in my opinion, one of the best right backs to ever play in the Premier League. Do you know what I mean?
So, I mean, that's a big call, but he was great.
This is what I mean. I look through the Wimbledon teams and I just think, they don't get Robbie L's and things like that. And Joe Kinnear just, and as I said, he went through many of, it's really weird. And it's just my opinion, but he had the Alex Fergusons about him. He had the props about him. Do you know what I mean? Because everyone called us long ball merchants, but Liverpool play that way now. They get the ball forward to the strikers where they're going to do most damage. And they do it quick. And we did it quick.
Yeah.
And we got the ball up to Marcus Gowers and Dean Oldsworths and Fashes and people like that. Quick, get people around them and we'd score goals.
I remember when he won the Manager of the Year, the Premier League one, which was a really big deal. And I think it's only when you look back at it now, when you look at if you look at the clubs now who have been in the top six in the Premier League, there's very few teams that kind of bust into that. It kind of is what it is. You've obviously got, you know, Villas are a little bit, they've come back into it, and you had Leicester at a bit of a period, and you might want to say Stoke maybe drifted into it. But that kind of group, I think the thing for me is that he established an identity at a time I felt when we really needed it. The Premier League kind of came in and was all about sort of money, and then the influx of international foreign footballers. I remember when Hullet came and I was like, oh my God. And then it was Hullet, and then it was Zola. And I was like, Jesus. And all of a sudden, these Desailly's and LeBoeufs, and they're just the Chelsea guys. And it just felt like we needed something to sort of kind of make us a bit different. I just think it was quite an interesting...
It was...
Excuse me. I like the idea of what we did it. And again, I guess for me, I was talking about it, but he actually did, bro. When you think about the Kimballs, I mean, he was Cambridge, Rennie Kimball. Yeah. I mean, that was really, really low down. Cunningham and Goodman was Millwall. I don't know if they were Championship, to be honest. I couldn't possibly tell you. But you obviously had that. Thatcher was Millwall, if I remember correctly.
Players that we had from Brentford, and they would have been League 1, League 2 at the time.
I think they would have been a lot lower. So he definitely had a really good eye for it. I think the thing that impressed me the most, I think, is the fact that he... And I don't know... We obviously spoke to Terry Burton, didn't we? And Terry Burton, it kind of transpired from when we spoke to him that Terry Burton is out there on the grass constantly, and Joe Kinnear's the kind of right you. But I think the thing that now I look back at it, he absorbed a lot, Joe Kinnear, didn't he? Like all of the he absorbed all of the pressure, he absorbed all of the pain and the press and that sort of nonsense. He soaked it all up and then managed to defend the players when they were getting slaughtered a lot. And he kind of felt, he almost seemed delighted to do it. And he kind of was the perfect appointment. It was interesting because apparently he was turned down for the job when Peter Whiff got it. So apparently, I was watching a documentary with Sam Hammam, fortunately. But he was basically doing an interview, and he said that he interviewed before and he thought he would be good, but he didn't think he was quite ready. He got Peter Whiff in. Peter Whiff went, and then he went, right, I'll have him. And he picked up Joe Kinnear. And it was just, just some really, really great times. I can't comment on the back to the era or comment on anything else, but just shows what an unbelievable club we are. Like, seriously, the climb into Football League, the climb then to the top division. You then got this tiny little club with no home, punching hard. Do you think, though, it will really kick him not to have got that game that day at Wembley? Do you think that is a real regret of his? Do you think he'll kind of... And how close were we, do you think? How close were we to that?
Well, I think we were really close in the League Cup because of we only lost on away goals.
Leicester one?
Yeah, the Leicester one. I think the Chelsea one at Highbury, we just got absolutely battered by Jim Franco Zola and things like that. And
the Tottenham one was annoying, but the Leicester one really hurt, didn't it?
The thing about a Joe Kinnear team is that you knew you could go up to Old Trafford and beat them 1-0. But you also knew that we could also get spanked 5-0 because we would go out. Do you know what I mean? And this is why I loved football back then. And I wish we had football like that again. I loved the players. Like people like, as I said, Vinnie Jones coming from Wilston and Hodkerry, and even people like Stuart Pearce was a builder.
Yeah, Wilston again.
Going to Forest and things like that. And they were good players. They could play football, but they were good men and good people as well. And Joe Kinnear just got the best out of the players that he had at his disposal. I was looking at I think you're right. I think not getting into Europe and things like that as well would, because I think
that, do you know what? I think that's actually a really good point. I don't think he'd been bothered about that Wembley, but Europe, I think it would have been interesting.
And it annoys me a lot because obviously 88, we should have gone into Europe after winning the FA Cup. I was looking again, we all know that we finished sixth place in the Premier League, Dan. That's mad when you think about it. Like the teams there, we were finishing above Chelsea on a regular basis. Chelsea were nothing to us back in them days. We finished ninth the year after. But also, if you look at the records that we had, that in today's football, Joe Kinnear might have been sacked after we didn't win the first three games when we got spanked them first three games. Remember Tony Yeboah's goal at Selhurst?
Yeah, yeah.
So
we had Man United and we had somebody else and then we had Tony Yeboah.
Yeah, Man U when we went Beckham, on that mad run.
Beckham scored the other end.
And then Tony Yeboah.
And then we had a game somewhere and then Yeboah went mental and we were like, oh my God.
And we were free. And then, do you know what I mean? And then suddenly we go and get...
Mind you, they might have been different seasons. I mean, they all merge into one, to be honest. But I do remember it might have been different because I'm pretty sure Neil Sullivan was in goal for against Beckham.
He was definitely in goal against Beckham.
Yeah, I think, though, Paul Heald might have been in goal against Yeboah. But we, you know, if you put them in the mix, plus the Canio goal, I mean, and Shearer, obviously, he absolutely whacked one in against us at Newcastle.
Vinny winning goal?
Was it that one? It might have been that one, but there was a game where Newcastle, Shearer just ball dropped. I think Sullivan was in goal. But the ball dropped, he just actually whacked it.
And I used to have so many arguments with people about the way we played football and the way Joe set us up and stuff like that. And it used to wind me up because people used to say you were just a long ball merchant. You know what I mean? The ball's coming down with snow on it. And it just wound me up because I look for our team at the time when I was putting Wimbledon and when I first, and we had some ball like Alvin Leonardson's, you know what I mean, Michael Hughes's when he signed from West Ham. We had players who could play. We had Dean Ellsworth who could score. How many goals did Dean Ellsworth? I can't remember his record, but didn't he get a lot, 20 goals in a season?
And the other thing as well, by the way, is by the nearer the end of his tenure, we didn't have a target man because the cuckoo couldn't head the ball for Toffee. He was crap in the air. But you had Gale, who was decent in the air, to be fair to him. I didn't think a cuckoo was good in the air at all. He was much happier running with the ball. So when you got to the end, when it was like Holdsworth, Gale, or Cuckoo, that kind of dynamic, there isn't really a lot of long ball play that would have been successful.
This is it. He scored 19 goals in the Premier League, Dean Ellsworth. Then he scored 17.
Wasn't it 20 and then Hamam had to kiss his bum or something stupid like that?
He had to do something mad.
There was an elephant on the pitch and that kind of rubbish.
But we didn't even have a proper training ground. We trained at Roehampton. Do you know what I mean? Which was just a part of the...
I went there for the Rosalind Park Sevens.
Well, I met Joe 3 or 4 weeks ago. Crazy Gang Day, when they used to do the Crazy Gang Days. So you go down, you train and stuff. That's where I met Fathead Irish Gary Saxby. And that's where I met him and stuff. And we were training.
Was he called Fathead back then?
Because his head back then was even bigger. Like it literally.
So he literally came up and said,
It was like he was carrying Humpty Dumpty around on his shoulder. But we would play football for the Crazy Gang days. And then you got to meet all the players. The players were training literally a pitch or two away. So all the players were going through the training drills. And then Joe would walk around and then he'd come over and said hello. And he said, how are you getting on? And I said, Joe, like, you should sign me up. And he just laughed and walked off. So a bit rude, but he was, I got really choked up the other day when I heard the news. Because as I said, I remember him walking off the pitch that time. Remember when we got the 3 points and he's just put it in his pocket? Do you remember? Yeah. I think we weren't great that day and he just went.
No, we were rubbing. I think there was a lot of booing going on.
And he booed after time.
And stuck it in his pocket.
And half time he told a few of us to fuck off or something. I'm sure he did.
Bold call, but had Kinnear not been ill, and we don't get rid of him, there is a relative argument to say that this whole AFC MK thing may never have happened.
God, one of our mates, Nick, mentioned that the other day.
If you think that the only reason, really, I know people will say, well, by the end of the Kinnear thing, we kind of had a little drop or whatever, but the fact that the year that we got relegated, we were so poor at the end. I would have fancied Kinnear to have got us out of that. And it's not a surprise to me that the minute we got relegated within a couple of years, all of this stuff kicked off. I'd be fascinated to think whether or not this would have happened if he, and more importantly, would he have even stood up? I think he'd have gone mental.
You hope so. I really hope.
Terry Brown was obviously very interesting and he was quite vocal about it, but Joe Kinnear would have just gone mental. I think he'd have gone.
One of our,
so maybe, but
One of our mates said the other day, wonder what would have happened if Joe had not got ill and unfortunately had to kind of step down from the role. And then we got Igor Olsen in, and everyone knows the story behind that. And once we got relegated, it was easier to
definitely
then pitch the move.
You could genuinely, I think it's not unreasonable to think that him going was the catalyst, was the starting point of this journey.
And the problem
that's not his fault or anything else, but it is the fact of
him
going meant he came in, meant we got, and the minute we got relegated, everyone knew that this was a problem.
Yeah,
we had one year to get back, and we had Artson, and we sold him in, I think he was in the January maybe, and we kind of got, I remember being at home against Crewe, thinking we've got to do this to try and have a chance, and I think we fluffed the lines, and that was that. But some of the memories that I have, some of my favourite footballing memories are definitely with him as our manager. He was the perfect fit. It is a shame that we didn't get the day out that we kind of deserved. And I felt as a fan base that team deserved its day out.
The year we finished sixth, if we've got into like now, you get into the Europa League, don't you, now, if you finish sixth?
Yeah, or Conference League or whatever. Yeah.
Can you imagine a European Conference?
Let's be honest, we wouldn't have cared less, would we, what we did.
Can you imagine a European Conference? Yeah, and this is what annoys me about modern football nowadays, is teams are getting in the European Conference, and I know West Ham won it last year, and they're actually embraced it and called it the, the Champions of Europe. But I would have loved to have gone and watched Wimbledon play in Prague or in Moldova or Estonia or anywhere in Europe, watching that team, Robbie L, Cole Court, people like that, Ben Thatcher, coming up against a load of like Serbian hard men and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? That would have been something else. But my only issue I have is a lot with Newcastle as well, is the way they treated Joe when they went there. They thought they were too good for Joe. They should have had a better manager or stuff like that, because he weren't this name. And that really upsets me, annoys me as well, because he was far better than Newcastle ever deserved. You know what I mean? I think he had a better record at Newcastle than Alan Shearer did. And the disrespect they showed the man really winds
up. The challenge as well, though, with him is that his trajectory had started in terms of having been ill, coming back. And again, I think he left Newcastle because he was ill again. I don't remember too much more about that. But I think that the Newcastle, because he was mates with Mike Ashley, wasn't it?
He knew Mike Ashley. I think he knew him. I don't know if he was mates, but
I actually really like Newcastle as a club. I think I like them. I think they're fine, and it is a shame that it transpired the way that it did. But I don't think it should water down his achievements. He was superb. I don't know whether or not what Newcastle expect. I'm not sure Joe Kinnear is the right guy.
I think the problem Joe had is he had this. It's a bit like Sam Allardyce. People say Sam Allardyce only plays one way. He only goes into relegation teams and saves them and stuff like that. I think Joe Kinnear then had that as well, that he only played long ball. Do you know what I mean? I look back and I think of the players that we had coming through our youth system at the time when Joe was there as well, when I was supporting Wimbledon. I'm not sure before that, but some of the players we had through. And I forget to tell you the other day, Dean Blackwell came down to Wimbledon. Where were we at home before Salford? Last game before that, Harrogate. Dean Blackwell came and he stood in with us in, well, look, I weren't there, but my mate Lou knew him, and he said, "Oh, mention it to the club. The club will get you tickets." And he was like, no, I don't want to mention it to the club, because I don't want to go in. I want to go in with the fans, the people that support Wimbledon, and the reason why like loved it. And he went in, and some of my mates were like awestruck with him. Do you know what I mean? It was like an A-list celebrity was there and stuff like that, and asking him a few questions about the old days. He's put some timber on as well, Dino. But he was in with the fans and people like that. Dean Blackwell coming through, and do you know what I mean? And Chris Perry's, Neil Sullivan's.
I think Jason, if you Yule's. Think about how he, like, you know, he, another one, people like Brian McAllister, who he managed to get every ounce out of what you could have said was some relatively. If you imagine my mates at work, right? If I did do like random Premier League footballers, loads of them of the Wimbledon players, they wouldn't recognise. They wouldn't know who Alan Reeves was. They wouldn't know who Scott Fitzgerald was, or they Andy wouldn't Clark. Have a, you know, they would have no idea who Kerry Hughes was. They just wouldn't know who these players were.
No, I know.
But Kinnear found a way just to make those kind of players and you young players and, you know, identifying the Yules and the Courts and
New Ardleys
and the Ardleys and the Lionel Morgans and that sort of stuff. He kind of identified these very, very good players. And he had a very, very good balance. And it was a shame because we kind of just we got Hartson, didn't we? Did we get Hartson the year before? We must have done the year before. It just seemed that just when we felt that we could start chucking the checkbook out, because Hartson signing blew my mind.
Yeah, me
and
too.
I think, I don't know if that was him or not. I don't know. But I just felt like, oh my God, this is a time where they might actually back it financially. And we still backed Olsen. Olsen brought in loads of players.
I'd love to sit down with the two Norwegian guys and say to them, do they actually regret now, looking at the way football went and looking at the Abramovich's coming in? Because they were very rich at the time. They were one of the richest people in the world at the time. I think they spent 40 million on a racing boat and smashed it up a week later. They were that rich that they could have thrown millions at it. And do they wish they'd actually looked like now, the trajectory of football with the Saudis coming in and Americans coming in, they probably could have made a little bit of money out of Wimbledon if they got us back home to Plough Lane. Do you know what I mean? I just think, do they regret the decisions they made? And, do you know what I mean, trying to move us to this, which they did end up, Charlie Cobb will come in and we end up going our separate, like AOC Wimbledon started Milton Keynes. And now look how that's turned out to be an absolute awful, awful thing for them as well, like for Milton Keynes. Do you know what I mean?
But I mean, now it is tricky because if you put us in the Premier League, if you imagine that era, what, 92 to 99, if it was 2019 to now, greyhound racing is dead. It was a relatively easy transition. Back then, you've got no chance. The greyhounds was busy and it was a real... It was just an unfortunate coincidence that, you know, we were ripe for the taking. The biggest cock-up is obviously Merton not wanting us, because Merton didn't have a football club, a Premier League club, and it, rather than backing Wimbledon, it backed someone like Tooten and Mitcham, and it's just like, oh, mate, what have we done? But, you know what? It's sort of, I guess it's kind of part of our rich tapestry, and he's definitely someone that when I look back at, you know, the fun days, the stupid days, the real sad days, not this nonsense now, but going home and literally like almost not sleeping, frustrated about an event, or, you know, the day before we got relegated, that was hard, but yeah, he gave me some of the great memories and really, you know, great friendships. And like you said, he kind of opened that door. And I'll always be grateful for that.
I agree. And I said, you've got people that have got the Alan Batsford days. You know, and Joe Kinnear he was my date. Joe Kinnear was the man for me. He was my manager. He was a Wimbledon manager. He's my favourite all-time Wimbledon manager. Terry Brown comes close, and Dave Anderson and stuff like that. But Joe Kinnear, for me, gave me some of the best memories. I met some of the best people ever because I started going and watch Wimbledon and fell in love with it and fell in love with the team that we had. And again, it was all down to Joe. And yeah, I just, it was a sad day the other day when I heard the
news. And it was a nice touch from the club to acknowledge that. And
I hope we do something. I know we're doing something at Swindon. I really hope we do something at Plough Lane against Walsall.
I would be amazed if there wasn't
I hope we do. I hope we
a
do
round like of applause.
Applause before the game or on the minute when his birth or something, or his last birthday.
To be honest, if there's ever an opportunity to invite a whole host of Wimbledon players, last game of the season at home, Earl, Yule, Gail, Akuku, there aren't loads of them. I mean, to be fair, when you look at it, Akuku, Earl, they're obviously...
Earl's out in America, unfortunately, yeah.
They're all doing TVs and stuff, so is Binny. Fashion News... It would be interesting
I know they're doing the right thing with the black armbands at Swindon, but let's celebrate the man at home in front of a sold out Plough Lane.
Agreed, totally agree.
And do something for him. But yeah, last thing I want to say before we move on to talk about this, Bass, is Joe, thanks very much for the memories.
The Wombles had a dream podcast. By the fans, for the fans.
We're back and we're going to be discussing Alex Bass. Is he, well, Danny asked this question to me earlier, but is he the best goalkeeper we've we've had. And I know people are going to be shouting, Ramsdale. Excuse me. Yeah, Aaron Ramsdale. For me, it is Aaron Ramsdale. I think he is. But Alex Bass has been superb this year. He's a different type of goalkeeper, Danny, from what you normally have. Goalkeepers are usually mental. He seems very quiet, very reserved. I think I've only seen him lose it once, which was MK, when he went mad celebrating, which because he got all into this the whole situation. But yeah, he's very, you don't hear him going mental and stuff. He talks to his defence and stuff, but you never hear him shouting and stuff like that. But he is a really good keeper, and I, no chance we're keeping him for the next season. No chance we can sign him. I think he goes to League One Championship.
I mean, if you think about, firstly, he's kept the most clean sheets this season, him and the Stockport keeper. And in terms of goals conceded, Stockport have conceded 42, Mansfield 43, and then it's us. So from a defensive point of view, and let's just be clear before everyone moans about it or kicks off, there are more factors involved than just the keeper, but we've got the third best defence in the league, and he is our goalie. So he does have an impact on that. I think he's good.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Without doubt, though, Saturday was a poor game from a distribution point of view. And I guess it, what's interesting for me is I think he's really good, but I don't have like Rambo. And let's just get this out there now. Obviously, Aaron Ramsdale has been the best keeper we've had, right? We can all do that. We can all kind of move on from it. But the thing with Ramsdale is he had those like outrageous moments. Do you know what I mean? Like the Luton game was just disgraceful. Like anybody, and if you go back, when we go back and we talk about Ramsdale, people go, "Do you remember the Luton game? Remember the West Ham Cup game?"
Also, with Ramsdale, you could at the time you could say this kid will move on and he will play Premier League football. He will play for England. With Alex Bass, I don't know if I can say that.
Well, the thing I'm getting to is that Ramsdale had that sort of breakout moment that, oh my God, the state of this. Bass has been just solid.
I can't think of a worldy save that he's made. I know he's made a couple.
He's made some great saves. He's been excellent as far as I'm concerned. But I couldn't, if you said to me, talk to me about some of Bass's great saves, I couldn't. He's just a really solid, dependable, sensible goalkeeper who is an upgrade on every single, in my opinion, every single footballing metric to Zanev, and again, I don't think Zanev was poor, but I think what we've seen this year is a difference between Zanev and Bass, and the difference in our play and the sheer cock-ups and stupid mistakes that Zanev would make. Bass has just eradicated them.
For me, it's shown not how poor bad Zanev is, because I think that's probably quite harsh,
but what levels
there is. And Bass is 10 times a better keeper than Zanev and shows what we needed last year possibly. And I can kind of see where Robbo was coming with Zanev. He was
Zanev saved loads of penalties.
And Zanev wasn't that bad, I think, his first year that he came in. I think it got to Zanev's head a little bit. And he actually thought he was a better keeper than he actually was. And as you said, with Ramsdale, I think Ramsdale always had that ego. And he's already said himself, he has to have that banter with the crowd and stuff to keep him focused, because he can lose his focus. So if he keeps, do you know what I mean? He said it in interviews and stuff. But he was always, his ego's always been that good that he knows that he was going to the top. I think with Bass, I don't know if Bass knows how good he is, but he just seems very mellow, very calm. And I think that's very good for a defensive point of view in the fact that you've got to keep it behind you, that you know he ain't going to make. I don't think – I can't think of a mistake he's made that's led to a goal.
I can't – there must have been one or two.
I don't think there is. I really don't think there is. I think someone done
that. I'm pretty sure – well, I tell you, the main one would be Chelsea away.
Yes, but I'm talking about in the league.
Yeah, I can't think of – I can't think of a huge amount in the league.
Where before so what that, you, with Zanev, what, you could say there was three or four mistakes.
The Fleetwood thing, basically.
Yes.
I mean,
pretty much cost him his place in the team.
Yeah, and let's be honest, Fleetwood didn't get us relegated, but it was the straw that broke the camel's back.
100%.
So if you were describing Bass to somebody else, how would you describe him is part one of my question. Part two is, where do you rank him in Wimbledon goalies?
Where would I rank him?
Is he better than George Long? Because George Long,
I really
for me,
like George Long.
I mean, for me, I'm struggling with. I think Ramsdale is away.
Yes.
And then for me, George Long, I thought was really good.
I like George Long.
Bass has
really
been
nice guy as well. George, I've told you a story about him, right?
And George Long was in goal for us in League One, wasn't he?
Yeah, when he left, I sent him a message, not a private message, like on his Instagram. I said, "Oh, thanks for the season you've had and all this, George Long." And he messaged me and he sent my boy a handwritten note and a pair of signed gloves.
Yeah. And he's had a decent career.
He struggled at Millwall.
I think he's still there, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he was. I think they were trying to get him out on loan because they weren't over the. I think he's.
He was at Hull as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's when he done really well at Hull. But he hasn't gone on the. Up as I thought he would. I thought he might end up with a Premier League team, but something about his height or something. Or again, he don't talk enough. I think it'd be for me to say
James Shea. Would you put him in that kind of company?
Different level. He was a good keeper for us, a good shot stopper, but a low level. I don't get why.
So where does Bass sit then?
He probably is. He probably is second for me, up below Ramsdale.
Over George Long.
Just above, because I still think that Bass still hasn't reached the heights where George Long has now, and I know he's good for us, but I think Alex Bass has been better for us, and I think he'll go on to do well. I don't know where he'll go though, but yeah, I think he'll go on and do well. He's 26 though, Alex Bass. That's quite old actually. Well, no, keeper wise, it's not. But I thought he was much younger than that, to be fair. I thought he was about 22, 23. So his next move is going to have to be a big one, I think. I don't know. I was looking at Nathan Trott. Nathan Trott's been on. Remember Nathan Trott?
Yeah.
Thought he was okay. He's on loan again at a Danish club. I don't think he'll make it.
Is he on loan?
From West Ham. But I think once he gets to the end of his contract, I think they'll move him on. Kelly Roos, he's at Aberdeen. Doing all right at Aberdeen now. And he had a good stint after us. Where did he go after us? Derby. He lost in the playoff final as a Derby goalkeeper. And I think he's up there for me, Kelly Roos. Because I think that playoff is against Accrington and a save that he makes. It's like, do you know where he's going back? It's like a seaman in the FA Cup against Paul Pesky Solidido. That kind of save that he made against Accrington.
Paul who?
Paul Pesky Solidido. Cameron Brady's husband.
Yeah, Paul Pesky Salido.
That save he makes against Accrington probably gets us into the playoff final. And I thought he was solid in the playoff final as well. I thought he was a solid keeper. But if I was saying what Alex Bass is, it's a hard one, really, because if you were to explain him or if you were scouting on him...
But he's not a shot stopper, is he?
You probably wouldn't do him any justice.
No, well, and this is the thing.
Do you get what I mean? If someone said, what's Ramsdale like? You'd be like, fuck, mustard, mate. He's... Probably the best keeper I've ever seen. But if they go, what's Alex Bass like? I'd say, yeah, he's a solid keeper.
Okay, so what do you think is his best? Why? I mean, we've got 16 clean sheets, right?
It's such a weird he's one. Not, this.
And the thing with the clean sheets is, like, Salford made a couple of good saves, but there hasn't been loads of games where you've been like, wow, we've had to defend.
But you were saying, is our clean sheet down to him? Probably not. I think it was down to Johnson and Lewis.
And Lewis and everyone else.
I think they
And in defence of Jackson, the way that we've set up, and my dad actually.
Well, you're just going to cut through what I was just about to say.
Well, no, I'm going to go back to this thing briefly, and then I'm going to let you go. But what he was like, my dad reckons that the blueprint for us next season is going to be 1-0 to Wimbledon, basically. He's like, we're just going to keep it really tight. We're going to be very, very hard to beat. And we're going to basically get a goal and nick it, and that's going to be that. We're not going to play this fancy, fun, exciting football that we've seen with Ali. We're going to be very similar. Well, we're going to be similar to what we are now, but nick a win here, nick a win there. And I'd be interested to see where we would sit, because since Christmas, although we've been frustrated, we've picked up some points.
That's good.
But it's been poor. Anyway.
Good to know we're going to play that way when we're putting season ticket prices up. I think, again, I don't think it's solely down to Bass that we're keeping clean sheets. Johnson and Lewis were solid. Curry's, for me, the best left-back in the league.
I haven't seen a better left-back than Curry.
When Johnson and Lewis got injured, everyone was starting to go, oh, what are we going to do? I think we realised straight away that Pearce, unfortunately, has got to that age now where he's gone. And Brown, to be fair to him, I wouldn't have him next year, but to be fair to him, he stepped up. He's coming at a centre back. If I was him and I was looking at my next move, I'd be saying I'm a centre back now, not a left back, unless he's dropping right down to say Dorking Wanderers in the Conference South next year. But yeah, I'd be looking at centre back. I thought John Jarrah Tool's come in and done a great job for us and kept clean sheets at Notts County against Scum. Do you know what I mean? So I think defensively we've got it spot on, and Johnny Jackson has got that spot on. And that's a tribute to Bass, but I don't think it's solely down to Alex Bass.
So what kind of keeper then do you think he is? If we were describing him, is he just a jack of all trades, or is he, I mean, personally, I think he's a very good distributor. I think the one thing that has been very, very good is the way that he distributes.
Which is something we massively needed, because Zano couldn't kick for sure.
But also the problem was, though, and let's be honest, is that, going back a bit to Zanev, the way that we were playing didn't suit Zanev at all. Like, we don't pass out. We wanted Zanev to kind of pass it out the back a lot, out from the back. Well, I don't think we do a lot of that.
But that's Zanev should have been better at, because that's what Robbo was doing in the youth team. So that's how we played Zanev, through the youth. So he should have been able to take that.
But Zanev wasn't a youth keeper, was he?
Well,
came in, and then he was like a 21, 22-year-old.
And he played in the youth team.
Zanev played in the youth, but
goalkeeper, but I'm sure he played for like the under 21s, whatever they were.
But I mean, I think the reason why he's been so successful is I think he just kept his life really simple. He's caught his catches. He has played well in terms of distributing the ball however he's needed to. It also helps the fact that basically, almost from a goal kick, he just touches it to Lewis and Reeves and they almost play from the 6-yard box, which I think has helped him massively. In terms of the future for him, it will be interesting, because I don't know what Sunderland have got a youngish keeper, I believe. I think he'd be fine to go back up there and be their backup. I don't think that's a problem. But in terms of playing, he's got to be looking at League One as an absolute.
As I said, I thought he was younger than he actually is. He's 26, so he's got to be looking at. He's had a year now of us playing full time. He's got to want to do that again. I think he's looking at Championship, League One, maybe.
If you think that their main goalie, Patterson, is 23. And they've got another lad, this Nathan Bishop, who's 25.
I think he moves on from Sunderland. I just can't see us affording him. I know he lives in the flats around. He lives in one of the flats around by the ground. And Sunderland are paying the full whack for that. We're not paying a penny for his accommodation. I just can't see us affording him. As much as I'd love to sign him, and that would be, for me, one of the signings that we would love. Like that would be, we've already got the two at the back, him. And that spine would be brilliant. I just can't see it. And I just don't. What would you say next year then? Not talking about Alex Bass for a minute. Would we go down the loan market again, or would we be looking to get a sign the summer? Because Zanev is going to be gone. Bass is going to be gone. Does Falk step up as our number two goalkeeper, the kid from the youth? Or do we look at bringing in a loan or a first team number one?
I think in a perfect world, you want. We've shown this year that I think it's one of them weird ones that everyone says it, you know, oh, you always want the best player that you possibly can get. But I think keepers, it's easy to get good loans on the fact of there are a lot of teams in the Championship, in the Premier League, etc., who will stockpile keepers. And because there's only, what, there only two or so can play, or only one can play. I mean, you can look through the whole of the Championship, right, now, and you can go through each team, and there'll be goalkeepers who have not played a single game this year, who you'd be like, he'll be right with us. He'll be right with us.
Well, look at Alex Bass. Alex Bass is third-choice goalkeeper at Sunderland. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he's been probably the second, third-best goalkeeper in League Two.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
whether or not they're going to come to us is another matter. But, you know, you've got all sorts of keepers who I've barely played. So, classic example, right? I'm just going through this at random.
I was just going to say one to you, George Long. He's at Norwich now. He left and joined Norwich.
Looking at Matt Ingram, right? He was a decent keeper at Wickham. He was solid. He's barely played a single game at Hull.
Yeah.
You've got loads of keepers who are backup keeper at Leeds, backup keeper at Leicester, who are basically barely getting any football. There's no doubt that there's going to be lots of opportunities for potential goalies all over the place. I guess the challenge is always just going to be who is going to want to come down two divisions. And if you start going into League One, that's fine, but then you do lower it down a little bit.
Well,
but like
as,
I said, it,
as I said,
look
George,
at this, as
George
it,
Long has played seven games for Norwich. The last one he played was the 28th of November. And other than that, he's been on the bench every single time. And the last time he was on the bench for Norwich was the 9th of April. So he's been on the bench for Norwich. He ain't even playing for Norwich. Do you know what I mean? But that's someone we could be looking at on a loan if Norwich got him under contract.
Well, I'm just looking here, right? Just at goalkeepers at the bottom end of the Championship or in the Championship who have played very little games. Carl Darlow, 2 games. Leeds. Everidge, Birmingham, 2 games. David Cornell, Preston. Then you've got George Long at Norwich. He's only played 7 games. Chris Maxwell, he's played 8. Ingram has played 10. So all of a sudden, when you look at, like, you've got the guy at Stoke, Mark Travers, who played for, I think he played for Bournemouth in the Premier League. There are loads and loads and loads and loads of keepers out there who are second choice, excuse me, who have barely played matches. There will definitely be a keeper. So for me, I would be looking at the loan market. And I'd be looking at the loan market for players. The reason being is that I think that you can get a better keeper with, you know, say Norwich, George Long. We can go, look, we'll give you £3,000 a week. And they'll go, all right, that's 50% of the wage. We'll cover the other half. You can get a £6,000 footballer. And I think in goal, I think that, I mean, let's be honest, Alex Bass must be on £6,000. £8,000, maybe. You'd think so, wouldn't you? So
too rich for us, in my opinion. But...
yeah, 100%. And but that's what it's going. The one good thing will be that Bass will go from the Championship up. And if there is one Bass, there'll be another keeper somewhere. But I would be very surprised if we got a full time permanent goalie. But what they might take a punt on a. We had the tiny lad that we had. Do you remember?
Yeah. Oh,
loving his name.
Yeah, I remember
that, he's gone up my head.
To be fair, Bezo deserves a lot of credit, but the keepers that we've had, not just the ones we've had on loan, but even for people like Zanev to come in and go from on trial after being released and going on trial at a few clubs, us getting him and him becoming a professional footballer. Goalkeeper, and he'll go
Zaki
on.
Zaki Awala.
Oh, Zaki, yeah, I remember the little bit. That was a budget saving goalkeeping.
Oh my god! But he still played matches.
And I kind of see the reasoning behind it. Why we?
Yeah. Oh, I think we all get it. And like I said, if you ask the whole fan base if there's one position on the pitch that they're not concerned about regarding recruitment, it's going to be the keeper. I mean, we've had some great keepers.
But we've had some, like Kelly, as I said, Kelly Roos, we've had George Long, we've had Bass. We've had even Nathan Trott done a good job for us. Then Aaron Ramsdale. We've also had the ones we've never seen in Will Mannion. What's his name? Verzic, Cox. Yep. Do you know what I mean? And we've still got a couple coming through now. So, yeah, we are in safe hands with Bezo at the helm at the moment. Hopefully, Cope has some things up his sleeve with him and they can work together to get another decent goalkeeper. As I said, unfortunately, Bass and me won't be joining us next year. But we wish him all the best when he does move on. And we better move on, Danny, because we have been waffling, or you've been waffling. But we'll move on, and when we come back, we'll briefly go through the MD meeting and some bits and pieces.
The Wombles had a dream podcast by the fans for the fans.
So we're back, and we're going to briefly, because me and Danny have been waffling. I know everyone loves the waffle from us, but yeah, we're going to briefly go through the MD meeting yesterday. So it was held at Plough Lane. The managing director, James Woodruff.
Woodruff.
Yeah, met and done a Q&A in front of what looked like about 25 people. I was quite disappointed, Danny, that it wasn't streamed. I did ask the club a couple of times. I know Graham Stacey asked as well. We never got an answer until about an hour before the meeting to say it wasn't. I have asked a further questions to see if we are going to get a transcript of what was asked and the answers. But unfortunately, again, that hasn't been answered. I'm disappointed that a professional football club can put on a meeting like that and not get it streamed.
I think that's just a bit. I mean, surely that's an easy win, isn't it?
I hope so.
Seems like a really an easy win.
We've got things like Don's TV and stuff. Could them boys have not done it? They do the match day live before the game. They do it after the game. So could they not have done the stuff at the ground yesterday?
Maybe we'll contact Mr. Woodruff and see if he'd like to speak to us.
I did say yesterday, because they did say that there's going to be a further interview on the official podcast. But that official podcast meant to be a fortnightly podcast. And the last time they done one was 5 weeks ago. So it's not like there ain't fans podcasts out there that would be willing to speak to him, have done interviews before.
Why don't we send him a message and invite him to speak to us?
And I don't want to blow our own trumpets, but I believe that the interviews that we did with Danny Macklin before, when he was managing director, I believe the interviews that we've done with ex-players and stuff have been very good. I know the club got a bit upset because we did call the CEO at the club a bit of a dictator. But then I think that was fair game at the time, because he was being a bit of a dictator. But yeah, I don't get how we can't get it through. I know, who is it? Someone put a post up. I think it was Robert Boyce, who's part of the Dons TV team. So it was good that someone from within the club did send out something. But his takes were seen ticket prices increasing due to running costs. No plans for...
Which is fair. I mean, Liverpool have gone up, haven't they, 2%, and
Depends on how much they go up.
Have you heard this though about Liverpool?
No,
Liverpool have announced that they're going to put the season ticket price up by 2%. So, you know, 2p in the pound, basically. And they've gone mental. They're all boycotting the game tomorrow against Atalanta. They've said that no one's going to be taking any at the Kop. No one's going to have any flags, because it's a 2% rise, which is bold. But, with inflation and stuff, I feel like we kind of have to, really.
I kind of do. I just think, unfortunately, we might be outpricing our loyal fan base.
Yeah, because that's always a problem.
We've now realised that we've got a fan base of people that will turn up no matter what the football's like, because the football's been poor for a couple of seasons now. I know we're doing better this year, but it's still the football. Ain't it? We've talked about it a few times, how bad it's been. And I just think we know that we've kind of not a tourist club, to speak, but against Harrogate, it looked that way on Good Friday when people were cheering Harrogate's goal because they thought it was Wimbledon. And that the fact that we're in an affluent area and the people that are now coming to watch Wimbledon have the money to pay for season tickets.
Yeah, of course.
And they might do that. But I can understand the reasoning behind putting the price up. We have running costs that need covering. There's no plans for a loyalty scheme for away fans. That's probably about right at the moment. I
feel like that might not. I mean, there are so few times where we're oversubscribed.
We don't need a loyalty scheme. We just need the club to be better when they're putting tickets on sale.
Yes, 100%. Thank you.
They need to be better with the updates that they give the fans.
They need to tell people when the tickets are going on sale. Yes. And it needs to be clearer rather than like, oh, I didn't even know the tickets were on sale. Oh, by the way, we've sold out. What?
Yeah, we've had that a couple of times, which we mentioned on the pod. Leighton Orient was one of them. And there was one this season, I think, where I kind of lost my mind a bit as well because I was looking to go.
Sutton's always tricky.
And we didn't mention it. And then it was like the game sold out. And it's like, wait a minute, you hadn't even told people that the tickets went on sale. It was just luck that people went on the website and went, oh, look, Forest Green was on sale or something like that. So, yeah, I don't think...
Might be Wrexham as well. Wrexham, I
don't think a loyalty scheme is needed. I just think the club needs to be better with the information they're giving out.
I agree with that.
Plans to install an additional turnstile, which is needed.
Yeah,
50% sell-on fee for returning tickets. Again, I think that should be slightly higher because if you're getting a ticket, it's, what, £24 and you're only getting £12 back, you're not... You might as well give it to a mate or something, and people ain't going. And we've said it before, and we've said it on here. We get told every week it's going to be a sellout, packed out Plough Lane, and then you look, and there's like half the stands missing.
The thing I don't really understand with it, right? It's only if they sell your ticket, so you don't actually know whether they've sold the ticket or not. To be blunt, so you're kind of waiting almost on a. You're hoping that they're going to play the game, right? But for me, it's a bit weird, right? Because I buy the season ticket and say, for argument's sake, it's £15 for the season ticket. I've already bought the ticket, right? Yeah. So if the club are then going to sell the ticket...
For £15?
But they're not going to sell it for £15. They're selling the ticket for
£24. Yeah, sorry, yeah.
So they're already... I've already done them a favour because that ticket is now £39.
Yeah.
24 from the new money that you've got and 15 of mine. They're basically saying that they're going to give me £7.50. Okay, right. But they're still that ticket's still going for £32.50. And all I'm doing is by giving them my ticket, I'm allowing them to earn money. And I just think it's a bit poor that, frankly, if I've got a season ticket and I go, here you go, do you want to sell it and get another £24 for this ticket? In my opinion, it should be, yeah, no problem, we'll stick it. And I think it's great, by the way, that they don't give it cash. It goes into an account that you can access. I think that's brilliant. If they sell it, if they don't sell it, yeah, don't worry about it, mate, no problem. I can't prove it. If I go to Walsall, right, I'm not going tomorrow, and they go, oh, we sold your ticket, great. I can't prove it. I'm not going to be able to prove whether they sold the ticket or not. I just think it's a bit, personally, for me not going to the game, I think it's very charitable for a fan. Because otherwise, it's just not loaded. It's not doing me £7.50 for the ticket. Like you said, I'm just better off giving it. I'll ring up a mate to go, who wants to go?
Yeah, and you're also hoping the person that's buying the ticket now is going to go into the ground and spend money actually in the ground on concessions or on merchandise and stuff like that. Yeah, I agree. And that's why I think it should be slightly higher. And also, I think, again, the comms regarding the returning tickets and how that works and stuff needs to be better as well, because I've only recently seen it and it weren't... Yeah, I only now I understand how it worked before and only seen it recently. There's talks with Merton Council to change drinks licence to allow happy hour. I think that's a great thing, because a lot of clubs are doing it now, especially where we are. There's a lot of competition for good pubs, good bars, good restaurants.
So what, the happy hour would be before the game, after the game?
I don't know. They haven't said when the happy hour would be.
Because before the game would be absolutely chaotic. Imagine it. But it's hard enough getting a beer now.
The problem you got, again, as you just said, is if we're going to do a happy hour, they've got to do it at a decent time. And also, they've got to get the right bar staff in, because it's an absolute shambles trying to get a drink at Plough.
But if you're going to do a happy hour, it's got to be at 12 o'clock or at 6 o'clock.
Yeah,
because otherwise it won't work.
No, agree.
No, it can't be till 2 o'clock. It's got to be right at the beginning of the day, 12 till 1. So people are going to come early and they get a cheeky drink. Because otherwise people are going to turn.
Yeah, but then come in at 12, that means you can have more people in the ground at 12.
Yeah,
But the happy hour finishes, and then you're still going to have loads of people then trying to get drinks, and it's chaos there.
Well, either way, they can't. They're gonna, if they're doing a happy hour, it's got to be after six till seven post game pint, or it's 12 till 1.
Or just get
watch the early football,
or get good staff in that know how to freaking pour a pint and get it done quick, because some of the staff there are absolutely ridiculously slow and they're just clueless in what they're doing. I don't get how they're employed. One of my mates works in hospitality. He's worked at Wimbledon Tennis. He's worked at Wembley. He still works. He works at Wimbledon Tennis now. He works at Wembley, and he's just shocked at some of the stuff he's seen down there. And it's ridiculous sometimes. There's a mention of an official app. Don't know what that means. No plans what to do with the third floor. Plans to have in-house security, as this will save a huge cost. Currently use agency. Stewards are getting mixed reviews again. I've seen some things recently. Again, we got two agencies on the security. So we got home, got one agency who does the home, and then we've got one agency who does the away, which blew my mind when I found that out against Milton Keynes, because I thought, would you not just have one agency and it's just one
you'd like to
on
think
the same
so,
page? Mad thing for me. I've got big issues with the security team. The head of security, he's a snake and shouldn't be in the job, in my opinion, but that's totally different subject. Running costs and labour have gone up for running a football stadium, which, yeah, unfortunately, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
He won't be using social media, which I think was Danny Macklin's downfall in the end. Gardner. Anna Perov has put there were, number 14, there is still a contract in place for the current ticketing system, but other options need to be considered to make the process easier. I think, again, this, I don't know if this was, I don't think it was Danny Macklin issue. I think this is a Joe Palmer issue. I saw Joe Palmer the other day, popped up on my ex Twitter feed regarding Notts County, selling them the same dreams he sold us. I think it's the same ideas that people had at Wimbledon that he tried to claim as his own. The only difference now with Joe Palmer is he looks like he's had a haircut, and he put a fancy suit on because he's at Notts County, and they're lapping him up. And I think they're going to have a tough pill to swallow when they realise that he's an absolute fraud. They are looking for different ways to use the stadium between games, conferences, concerts, and so on. I still think we have a lot of space there for things like boxing events, not actually in the on the pitch, but in the conferencing facilities and stuff. And there's loads of room for stuff like that. She did go back to 11. I'd be great to have women games at Plough Lane more often, but it needs to be considered with Broncos as it's a commercially good partnership, which is true. I don't know how commercially it's going to be when Broncos get relegated. They're only in the Super League for 1 year. Even if they won games, they're getting absolutely spanked.
Well, they've even got a game coming up, which is a home game, which is not a Plough Lane. They've got a game at the Stoop.
Yeah, but they're getting spanked left, right and centre every week.
They've got no chance of staying up.
But they can't anyway. They've relegated no matter, even if they won the league.
They're changing, aren't they, after this one into the franchise bit. And they're toast.
So I don't know. And to be fair, the women's game, if it makes money and it's viable, then do it. But if it doesn't, unfortunately, they can't play at Plough Lane. It has to be viable, and you have to get bums through. It can't cost the club money for the women's team to be playing there.
To be really honest with you, I don't really care how they do it. But the one thing I would say is, since we've gone to Plough Lane, the whole conversation has been earning more money, getting more people in. Talk is cheap. We need to get more people in that place. So however they do it, I mean, Lerone Richards had a shocker. His fight's been called off Friday. Bloke's got an injury, so he was meant to fight on Friday at York Hall, Bethnal Green. That's now off.
Oh, is that Lerone Richards?
Yeah, he's off.
He's got called off. I didn't know that.
Yeah, got called off this morning. Yeah, fight. I was going to go actually.
We looked at going, but the ticket prices for things—it's
expensive. It was £62.50.
Yeah,
it is. I don't know if you've ever been to the York Hall, Bethnal Green. No word of a lie, it is the best sporting venue I've ever been to.
Really?
And it is. I think it is magic. Love it there. I know it's a big call, and you've got Plough Lane and Wembley's. Honestly, if you go there, you'll be like, oh, you're literally next to the ring. Everyone gets a good view. The atmosphere is banging. I think it's brilliant.
Because I know David and Laurent came on the podcast when we first started with me and Jamie. And then, I'm away, so some of my mates were talking about going, and then I think the prices kind of put them off a little bit. And then one of my mates said about going to see the Black Keys at Brixton the other day. You're looking at about £100 a ticket now to go see gigs, and it's 60 expensive. Quid to go watch boxing at York Hall. I just think.
And the problem with, unfortunately, but not to turn it into a boxing podcast, but the main bills often pull out. To be honest, I don't have a problem, but we do need to find some.
That's
money.
What I mean. There's
and if he doesn't want to go on social media. I think social media has got its good and bad points. It's great when it works. It's bad when it doesn't. I don't think it's a negative or a positive. I think I personally feel like you could use social media and be engaging. And
my problem, Danny, and I've always said this to you, we need to use all outlets of the fan base and not just the official ones and stuff like that. We we would happily talk to him. I'm guessing the guys at Don's Vlogs would happily talk to him. Don's on tour. Reese would talk to him. Do you know what I mean? Open yourself up to other channels. We are a fans podcast. We never stitch anyone up. When we had Danny Macklin on, I think we were fair with Danny. He was fair with us. Do you know what I mean? And then we raised issues and stuff, and he took them on board. And I think you have to use the platforms that you got. And unfortunately, there's two clicky within regards to the club media that they don't allow it. And in my opinion, I don't think the club media are that great at doing interviews. They put out some good content, but in my opinion, the people that do the interviews, I just don't think they're very good at interviewing people. And that's just my opinion. And it's not their strength. And that's something they could improve on. But there are other places. I think Reece Fletcher would be brilliant at doing interviews. Tom Large, I like him on the Don's TV. As I said, the other people, I do find them quite boring and stuff like that, and maybe open it up a little bit better. But there's stuff like me and you. I think you do good interviews, and I've got blown me out of trumpet. I think I do an okay interview. So if he wants to come and talk to us, we're happy about it. But the other thing I wanted to speak to you quickly before we move on. Sorry, do you want to say something, Dan?
No, go.
Was the end of season awards. There's nothing, I have not seen anything regarding selling that. And we're talking about filling the stadium. And there's nothing regarding a end of season black tie awards like we have done previously. I know last year it didn't go down too well because the club, the players all came in steaming drunk and were rude to people. But yeah, if we finish 10th this year, I don't know why we're not having one. I still think there's still a little disconnect between the players and the fans. Again, I think this is a club issue, not a players-fan issue. I think we're closer to the players because we're doing well. Yeah. So, I mean, and they've given us the moments like MK. But I still think the club don't give us the content that we need to get closer to them. Again, the interviews are poor. Do you know what I mean? And there's no ever any kind of banter or back and forth or anything like that. If you watch some interviews, like the Tubes, you know, have you ever watched his golf thing?
Yeah, him and Ballard are fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic. There's a bit of banter. There's a bit of, you know what I mean? You hear things that you want to hear, not just the straight club answers. Do you know what I mean? And Lee Brown... I think Lee Brown could have been fantastic for this club if we had got to know the real Lee Brown. I don't think we have done. I think we've got to know what the club want us to know. And I think we could do better in that. And I think we need to have an end of season. I know last year's was poor, but have an end of season. I don't think it needs to be black tie. I don't think we need a professional speaker as, say, Aaron Paul, who hosted last year. I don't think we need that. I love the ones that we did when we had a marquee on the pitch. And you sat down with the players, you had a conversation. Lewis Taylor, remember I spoke to him about when, do you know what I mean? And having that kind of interaction again with the players. But there's nothing regarding that, selling tickets to that. And we play Walsall soon. And there's nothing regarding, we recalled this before the weekend. So something might come out, might come out after we've recorded. So it might make us look silly. But knowing the season awards yet, I haven't seen anything regarding voting.
It does seem a little bit late in terms of normally you'd have it because you could organise, because, you know, it's also going to be a really interesting night on the fact of, I ain't got a clue who's player of the year. I mean, I think it could be any of five or six.
Jack Curry.
I don't think there are.
It would have been Ali, but he's obviously gone.
And then you would have thought, it'd be Reeves.
But there's no, like, it's Curry. Junior
now
Dons.
Now Boogie, all, you know.
What about Junior Dons player of the year?
Well, exactly. Who's that going
to
be?
I don't know what's in front. I don't know. I haven't seen anything on any of the outlets to say this is what we're doing for the player of the year. This is the players that are up for this. This is the players that are up for this. Get your votes in here. I said to you earlier, and you took the piss out of me, going, I remember when we used to have boxes and you write your vote and you put it in like a box.
Yeah,
like you said, well, we don't live in
Victorian times.
Yeah, we don't live in Victorian times. But we have older fans who might want to vote. You said to me your dad ain't overly great on social media and stuff like that, he might prefer to write it and put it in a box, and he gets his vote across.
But he'll get confused. He'll be writing a Father Christmas, won't he?
He'd be putting an X in Keir Starmer, wouldn't he?
Hey, let's keep politics out of
it. Yes, we've said that. But you know what I mean? And I just think at the moment, again, we are letting
down. I know exactly what you mean. We're a little bit light on the information on that.
Our comms, again, is letting us down. And we've had 5 weeks now, I think. How many we've had? The War Child stuff and the new stadium, the new shirt, and selling that, and that's a great cause. But that's for me. We just need to now start our club again, like player of the year, and get.
Agree.
Do you know what I mean? Selling. We need to sell seats, bums on seats, for an end of season award that could be £100 a person or a table for 500. And there's none of that at the moment. And then they're going to drop it and go, oh, a week after Walsall, if we're not in the playoffs, this is where we're going to have our thing. And it'd be, or are they thinking we might be in the playoffs, so we can't sell anything yet? But then you do it for after the playoffs, don't you?
They you do it. Everyone knows that you would do it at the start, before the playoff starts. You'd have the end of year, wouldn't you? I mean, it's a way of getting everyone psyched up and ready to go for the end of the year. Yeah. It should be after Walsall. I mean, it should be obvious, but if they haven't announced it yet, you think it's
We're out Friday. We're talking on a Friday now, and if nothing's come out by the time this goes out, we're 2 weeks away from the end of season when the award should be given out. It's not a lot of time for people to vote and stuff, but
no, exactly.
Or sell tables and seats for an end of season party. But anyway, we'll move on because I think this is going to be about a 5-hour episode tonight. But right, we'll move on and we'll do a rewind.
Either we'll just talk about Swindon.
Yeah, Swindon. That Swindon lot.
The Wombles had a dream podcast by the fans for the fans.
So we're back for the final part of the episode, and it's going to be a preview of that Swindon lot. Swindon away. Swindon were in dire form until Saturday, I think, Dan. I think they won Saturday. I haven't got any of the details in front of me.
Yeah.
Bring them up, but they won. And yeah, they were in dire form before that. What's your thought? What are you thinking? We mix up. We're still in a playoff hunt, which still blows my mind a little bit.
I mean, Swindon are absolutely, they are, if anyone's on the beach, it's them. But they had a really good result, obviously, against Barrow on Saturday. Which
Barrow
is,
are in free fall, to be fair, though.
Well, they had a game called off the other day. Again, we're still in it. So it's very difficult to criticise Jackson regarding the way that we play, because we've got the win. And frankly, right now, we just need to keep winning. We've won one in the last five. But the one that we've won, obviously, was the last game. So we go into it in pretty poor form. But at the same time, I guess it's just a case of anything can happen, really. I don't know. It's just, I think, to answer your question, Swindon are on the beach. It's a must-win game. So I guess it would just be same, really. I personally would love to see, I think that I would like us to go back to, I'd have a slightly different formation on Saturday. I would go with five at the back with three centre-backs, or do a 3-4-3. And I'd have the three centre-backs as Barmer, Lewis and Johnson. I'd have Nerfield on one side. I'd have Curry on the other, if he's fit.
As I say, if he's back, yeah.
If he's back. And then I'd have Little and Reeves as the two midfielders. And then up front, I'd go three up front.
Too defensive
and
for me.
I would go Kelly, Davison and Bugiel.
No,
and
yeah.
I'd have literally, I'd say to the five of them, the Curry and Nerfield and the three up front, don't worry about it. We'll look after the rest. And they just go.
So you're having Davison back in, even though the other
I'm having Davison back in.
Very weird. It's like you listen to me and then you're going, actually, Lee's actually right.
No. I don't think you're right. I think he's got to be better than Tilly.
Swindon
Tilly's been shocking.
Yeah, Tilly's rubbish. Big pitch. 4-4-2. I'd bring Biller back in at right back. I'd go Lewis.
So no Barmer.
No Barmer. Don't need
to. Never going to happen.
So Tilly, Palmer, Tilly, you've put me off now. Biller, Lewis, Johnson, Curry if he's fit.
If Curry's not fit.
Then maybe then push Biller left back and then go Palmer right back.
Okay.
And then four across midfield, I'd go Nerfield.
Reeves Little.
Sasu. Killian,
even though you said Sasu hasn't impressed you and all this sort of stuff last week,
but then I'm trying to figure the other.
So now you're backtracking.
Tilly, Sasu hasn't impressed me. I don't think he's done that well this season.
And obviously, because you're such a big Davison fan, you're dropping Bugle then, yeah?
No, I said Kelly and Bugle up front.
Yeah, but you obviously were bigging up Davison, weren't you, and saying how he hasn't played and Johnny Jackson's been harsh on him. So what you're doing is you're going to play Davison.
No, I'm playing Boogle.
Oh, you're not. So you're back. Oh, okay, fine.
No,
so,
I'm not backtracking, but I'm still.
Yeah, it just sounds like it. Yeah.
But for me, yeah, because Tilly's been horrendous. I'm looking at a bit. I am going to backtrack. Sasu out. I forgot about Gordon. Gordon in. Gordon starts. Is what's his name back, or is he still suspended?
No, he's got one more game out.
One more game. So I'm going to go Biller. If he's,
I'd love to see Biller back in the team, but I've been asking about this for the last 3 months, and
weird, isn't it? How he's not, and he's been around the squad though.
Well, the reason why it's weird is that I know people would be like, oh, whatever, but he had basically two bad games, and yeah, he got sent off against Stockport, and he's a bit lively, isn't he? He's a bit alpha, a bit aggressive, but my God, the boy can defend.
Yeah, and he goes forward quite well.
And I just think he's good. I think he's really, really good. I don't really understand why people don't like him, but I personally feel that I would love to see us be more aggressive. I would be playing 3-4-3 with
4-4-2. Biller, Lewis, Johnson, Curry, Nerfield, Reeves, Little, Gordon, Kelly, Omar up front. 2-0 Wimbledon.
So that's what we would Wimbledon. Do. But what's Jackson going to actually do?
He'll go 4-4-2.
Yeah.
He'll go Ballmer, Lewis, Johnson, Curry fit. If Curry's not fit, he'll go Lee Brown.
Yeah.
Then it will go Nerfield, Reeves, Little, Tilly, and then Omar. And
that's exactly what we'll do,
And we'll play really, really bad, really boring, not great, won't probably have a shot. And then second half, it'll change it around a bit, like we've said. It'll go with, listen to the podcast half time, go, actually, I think they're right. Or two,
well, that's
what you listen to it. And then
that's what he did the last week, wasn't it? He checked.
And then it would be 2-0 Wimbledon, and Kelly will score on Saturday.
So, what you're saying is that the person who's top of the predictions league,
mate, unbelievable,
with 3 games to go,
is
live on the podcast saying 2-0.
I've been getting a bit of stick about this as well.
Well, people are calling foul play.
You know why? It's because you've been so shit at updating us all.
I have been.
Horrendous.
Absolutely rubbish.
The funniest one is I fatted Gary Saxby. Oh, Saxby. I messaged him and said, oh, look at this, I'm top of the league. And he went, I gave up after week 10 or something. You know, one of them ones, you know, like, Gary Buss ain't happy.
He ain't happy, but
He ain't happy. And then who's the other one second?
He's one of the few who's right up there.
Who's the one who's second? I forget his name.
I don't know.
Baker. Sorry, not Baker. Barker. One sec. Let me get it. I've got it in front of me. Butler. Alex Butler. He was chuffed a bit to be joint second. Joe Mojo. As long as he don't win it, I'm happy. I'd have anyone else. Remember, there is a home shirt up for grabs for the winner.
Well, next week, I'll update from this week and the week before. And I won't lie. I'm going to be over the moon when the end of the season is here and I haven't got to do this poxy thing anymore. But I will change it to make it much more easier for everyone involved.
Are we doing it again next year, yeah?
I am officially hot off the press, committed to doing this again, but I'll be doing it in a way that is infinitely better and not reliant on me with a spreadsheet and 150 names. It will be something where you sign in to a league format and then you just type in your numbers and like Super Brew or say I might use an app.
You need to get work experience helping you. He's very good at this stuff. Good so
major. Big fan of his
What's work. Your prediction anyway? Because you're well out of it now. You don't even know.
I'm well out of it. I my heart wasn't in it. I think having thought that the season was gonna end in a crash of flames on Saturday, I think we're gonna go and beat Swindon.
Yeah, I do.
And I think Kelly's going to score a penalty. I think we're going to get a penalty. I think Kelly's going to score it. And I think we're going to win 2-0.
Yeah, Kelly's scoring.
Clean sheet. And then it will just be, all we're going to do is from now on, start looking at what the bloody hell are we doing? We're just going to basically start looking at where on earth, like, where's the football season going to go? So it's going to be on Saturday. I'm going to be looking at the game and I'm thinking, Can Colchester nick a result against Crawley? I'm thinking Doncaster, Accrington, Gillingham, Barrow. Gillingham are basically done. Harrogate, Sutton. Well, Barrow are still up there in the mix, but they're losing form mass dramatically. Morecambe, if they lose to Stockport, that's them done. Stockport only need a point, apparently, to get promoted, if my maths is right. And it is. So Stockport need one more point and they're promoted. Excuse me. So, who knows? I think it would just be lovely if we could get back in the playoffs just for one last screenshot, if you like. Even if Crawley conceded in the first minute, we score in the third, I'm taking the picture, I'm going to go, look, we're back in the playoffs, and then watch the end of the world crash before our eyes. But it's an exciting end of the season, isn't it? I mean, we've got there's still plenty going on. We've got another busy Tuesday where all of those teams are going to catch up with us. And then it'll just be Saturday. So, yeah, 2-0. Kelly's going to score. Viva the Dons.
Viva the Dons, right. That's us for another episode. Thanks to Gary Fletcher and the lads at Season Master for sponsoring this season's pod. They had a 2-year sponsorship. That is now coming to an end with 2 weeks to go. So if you want to sponsor the podcast, if you want to sponsor the Sunday debrief, please get into contact, send us a message. We'll then talk to you about our numbers and stuff. The numbers are decent, if I have to say so myself. So might be worth putting in a little sponsorship deal to us and what we want to do with that sponsorship money, regards to equipment, maybe getting our name in the program or something like that as well. So, yeah, speak to us. But thanks to Gary and the lads down at Season Master. But that's it. Another episode done. Dusty for me and Danny. We'll see you again next week. Not sure about a debrief this Sunday. I think I might be busy. Next week, there'll definitely be no debrief. But we'll do one after Walsall, guaranteed. But, yeah. That's it for us. Come on, you Dons.
Oh, we're bulls.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at oseamalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.